Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. Hour two on a Friday. We're live in L.A. It's The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Good guest today. Ryan Russillo busting my chops. Chris Peterson. Great Chris Peterson. He's going to be now at Fox, college football stuff. Scott Pioli in 5 minutes. NFL Network, former Chiefs, Falcons, GM, personnel guy with the Patriots for years. Joy Taylor joining me. It is so, turn on the TV last night, get all that energy. Ohio State's going to be really good. They're not really, really good yet because their quarterback's like a kid. You can watch Ohio State and, you know, by week seven, you don't want any piece of them. They could win the national championship. But it's going to be interesting because they're not good now because the quarterback's too young. They got Oregon right around the corner. So it's a big chance. That's their toughest game of the year because they're not as good as they should be yet, and Oregon can score. So that'll be a really interesting game. I think that game's on Fox, too. Ohio State-Oregon's a Fox game, I think. Correct? Yeah, I'm right.
Yes.
So that'll be a huge challenge for them because they're better than Oregon. I'm not sure they're better now than Oregon. That's the way it works sometimes. When young quarterbacks, like, I know certain teams in this league are going to be good. They're just not going to be good in September. Kansas City's going to be good
in
September.
Well, you know, college football doesn't have the luxury of a preseason.
And yet 17, 20 hours a week to practice.
And if you're getting your tough opponents up early.
So we've talked about this before. Everybody has one or two people in their life that you bump into every, like, year. And you're always like, oh, my God, we should hang out more. I've got your number. I promise we'll go out for lunch soon. And then you walk away and you never do. I've got that friend. You know, we've all had that person where you bump into, you like them, they're an acquaintance, not somebody you want to hang out a ton with. Cam Newton is that in the NFL. Everybody tells you they love him. And every time he's available, nobody takes him. Nobody badmouthed him his entire career. I mean, Ron Rivera said nothing but nice stuff. And Belichick, I mean, we joked about it on this show. He treated Cam better than Tom Brady. He gave Cam Newton more compliments in the first month than he did Brady in 20 years. Belichick once had to give Tom Brady a game ball last year. The year before. It was cringy. It was so uncomfortable. Cam walks into the door. Oh, it's the most coachable guy I've ever had. I love it. Yet Ron Rivera chose Kyle Allen, Cam's backup in Washington, over Cam, and Belichick released him. He's the friend the minute they're available, I can't make lunch today. Cam Newton had no market as a free agent, and now he has no market as a backup. Will Greer was released by Carolina. An hour later, the Cowboys picked him up. Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tyrod Taylor and Mitch Trubisky not only had markets, they had markets quickly. Washington flew Ryan Fitzpatrick up on a private jet. Tyrod Taylor was out of work a minute. Mitch Trubisky, Buffalo, good team, get over here. They had a market. Cam's got no market. Had no market before, he got no market now. Well, it's the mechanic. You know, he's been injured. Stop with the injuries. Carson Wentz and Sam Bradford are hurt every 15 minutes. Bradford always had a market, and Carson Wentz had multiple teams interested with a huge contract off a terrible year and a bunch of injuries. Carson Wentz had one of the best run teams in the league. Won it. By the way, Sam Darnold went 2-10 last year. He had a quarterback rating at 72. He had more interceptions than touchdowns. Nothing went right. He completed 59% of his throws. He regressed terribly. And I love Sam Darnold. He was bad last year. He had a market. Cam has no market. So you got to, it's like, I don't even know what it is with Cam, but there's just certain athletes. We do this all the time. Maybe it's because he came into the NFL as a number one pick and a star. And I've said this for years, how you enter a company is how you're viewed. If you start in the mailroom, you could be the smartest person at the company, but there's going to be a percentage of people that always think, well, you know, he started in the mailroom. If you start as a vice president, you could be a buffoon, but you're always viewed, well, corner office, he really knows what he's doing. Cam came in so highly projected as the number one pick and a star, and that's just how we view him. We just view him as a star. But at some point, how good you are in life in any industry is you're available. Who wants you? It's not a big market here. There wasn't before he got to New England. There's not now. I thought Dallas was a really good fit. Will Greer, I mean, they were obviously looking for a backup. Because the second Will Greer was available, the second Dallas picked the phone up, picked him up. So, and there's one or two other teams I think could really use a backup. But it's you know, this is not a calling right, calling wrong. Joy and I talk about this all the time. I don't get paid to be right. I get paid to be interesting. I'm not paralyzed by being right or wrong. I'm really not. I'd rather be right than wrong. But on the Cam thing, I've been saying this for years, is that people, and they did this with Carmelo Anthony for years. They just, everybody said the nicest stuff. And then nobody, when he was in his prime, wanted to play with him. I don't know what it was. And it may be with Melo. He came into the league as such a highly coveted star. That's how he's viewed. And so people are afraid to go against the grain and say, maybe Melo's a little overrated. Maybe Cam's a little overrated because they're so popular on social media. They come into the league as stars. It's much easier to say popular, easy things on social media than push back on stars. Then that's when you get the avalanche of hate. I mean, for me, 7 years ago to say, Westbrook's not a winning player. He's talented. I'd pay to watch him play, but he's not a winning player. I remember getting so much heat when I used to say I love Chris Paul because he doesn't dunk, he's not flashy, and he didn't get along with Blake Griffin. And I can remember getting nasty stuff. I'd be like, Chris Paul's the key to the Clippers, not Blake Griffin. Chris Paul's a winning player. Blake Griffin's just athletic. Blake Griffin's overrated. Chris Paul's way underrated. But again, Chris Paul went to a non-power out of college. He doesn't dunk. He's not flashy. He's not trying to curry favor constantly with memes. So it's easy to crush Chris Paul. Plus, he loses in the playoffs. So it's easy to bury Chris Paul. But it's harder with Westbrook because he's so entertaining and he's so crazy. He wins an MVP. It's hard to crush. So I think some of it with Cam is he is really popular and was, and he won an MVP for a long time that nobody wants to just acknowledge that. Everybody tells me how great he is. There's no markets for him. Will Greer had a bigger market. You know, Sam Darnold did. I love Darnold. He was terrible last year. He was bad, and I'm the biggest Darnold fan in the world. All right. So all these NFL execs ranked NFC and AFC teams, 1 through 16. NFC, I disagree with a lot of it. AFC, I agree almost right down from 1 to 16. The AFC stuff, I agree with almost all the way down the line. NFC stuff, I think they got New Orleans way too high, Philadelphia way too high, and I don't understand why I'm on an island with a Washington football team. I think they're really good. Joy doesn't like him. The executive, nobody likes Ron Rivera and the Washington football team. I think they're really, really interesting.
I love Ron. I love their defense.
I love their receivers.
I love their receivers.
Oh, it sounds like you love a lot of it.
I love a lot about it.
You just don't love Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I like Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Well, so you love almost everything and you like him, but you have him finishing 18th or something.
Finishing 18th. I think though it'll be between them and the Cowboys winning the division.
Yeah, I agree with that. We have the different teams winning the division.
Yeah.
If
I give the slight edge to the Cowboys because I think Dak is a better quarterback.
Yeah, well, Dak is a better quarterback.
And I don't think Dallas' defense is going to be as bad as they were last year.
That's fair.
And Dallas has better receivers.
Yeah, but I will say this. Getting Curtis Samuel, Washington's receiver's pretty good. Pretty good. Not Dallas, but pretty good.
Yeah.
Scott Pioli, NFL Network, former NFL GM, over 27 years of front office experience, is joining us live. So let me talk about Mac Jones for a second. Scott, you know this. If the offensive line is a top two or three O-line and your running back production is top two or three, you don't need your quarterback. It's not as quarterback dependent. That has historically been a Kyle Shanahan offense where you can run the football. I look at Mac Jones, and I got to be honest. Scott, this looks like one of their better O-lines. They have an incredibly deep running back room. That Oklahoma rookie running back had a nice preseason. I'm not sure if they're going to ask Mac to throw over 24 times a game. I think for the first time in 20 years, we're underselling New England a smidge. How do you feel about him?
Well, first of all, Colin, great to be back. It's been way too long. Enjoy. Hello to you, too. you know, I don't think you're very far off, because if you go back 20 years, you know, before he became Tom Brady, a big part of our game was we had Antoine Smith, who crushed it in the running game. We had Kevin Falk as a change of pace back. We had good players around Brady, and we made use of high percentage throws, the short and intermediate routes, the check down, and a good offensive line. It wasn't a great offensive line, but it became a very good offensive line. And we had a strong defense and strong special teams. To me, the key with Mac right now is going to be whatever he is right now to start the season, it's not going to be his best. He has time to get better. He's got talent around him. You know, I talk about the short and intermediate game. The signing of those two tight ends are really going to help him in the intermediate game and allow him to get the hands in explosive players that can do a lot of things after the catch or on handoffs with the running back. So, to me, the thing that he has to do is not lose football games. And that was the key with Brady back in the early 2000s. And again, I'm not comparing him to Tom Brady in any way. I'm just saying that's what we had to do to win games back then. And you mentioned other players in this league, Colin. It is very true. As long as they can go out and not lose a football game, you've got a chance to win it with the coaching, defense, and special teams of the Patriots.
It's very interesting. So AFC executives had the Dolphins 11th in the AFC, and the comments were, I don't trust Tua. The other comments were, the schedule's tougher, which it is. The other comments were, listen, they had so many defensive touchdowns last year. That stuff doesn't happen on a regular basis. And so when the Deshaun Watson rumors come out, if you're a Dolphin fan, you may look at that negatively, like Tua is no good. I look at it positively. I say the front office and the coaching staff are acknowledging we may not duplicate everything we did last year, where we led the league in takeaways, almost no penalties. So I look at the Miami situation as an acknowledgement by the front office with Deshaun Watson. We're not great there. Now, Brian Flores pulled back. He pulled back because I want my front office to have self-awareness, Scott. Like, we don't always have the best players. That, to me, if I'm a Dolphin fan, it's like, hey, they see what my eyes see with Tua, which is, man, there's not a lot of special. He's capable, not special. What did you make of the rumors, first of all, with Deshaun, and then Flores pulling back and getting out of him very quickly?
Colin, here's what I say is, at what point, you said the proper word, rumors. We have never heard any confirmation of anybody within the Miami Dolphins talking about the trade for Deshaun Watson. It's been all of these stories that have come from different places everywhere except the Miami Dolphins. Now, we can say, well, where there's smoke, there's fire. But I also know, as being a part of a front office for a lot of years, there were a lot of rumors and stories out there that we really had nothing to do with, and it never started with us. It had nothing to do with our own internal intel. It had to do with an agent trying to create a market for his player. It had to do with the other team trying to create a market for their player to get someone as a trade partner. So to me, I felt like Flores B-Flow was trying to put out a fire that maybe wasn't even really a fire. Maybe there's some truth to it. Maybe there's not. But again, I've not heard one person from the Miami Dolphins say publicly or tell me, even off the record, that this is a real thing. So I don't know what to make of things like that, Colin, because sometimes they are nothing more than rumors and they disappear. Yet we spent all this time talking about, you know, the chance that a player might be going somewhere.
You know, it's interesting. The NFC execs had the Cowboys 7th. Nobody rated them higher than 6, nobody lower than 9. Mm. They're viewed as a good, solid, average team in the NFC. And I said this before, it's very hard. Dallas, the operation side, Dallas is the best in the league. They've really marketed this franchise, facilities, marketing, branding, the best in the league. The football side, I'm not in love with, but it's not incapable. It's just not great. And Dallas has been a little bit insular, a little reluctant to let exterior voices come in and have real power. Jimmy Johnson, Bill Parcells, not always met with, you know, you'd like, I think great businesses are willing to bring in strong external voices into a room and have a new set of eyes. I don't feel Dallas does that particularly well. When you look at the Cowboys operation, when you were in this league and now, how do you view the football side? How is it viewed in the league?
Well, I think throughout throughout the league, it's viewed as being a very different organization because it truly is run from a personnel standpoint. Everything that is not just business related, but that is football related, is done through ownership. And I think that's the perception that the league has. Again, knowing some of the people that were there, it seemed like they had some of their greatest success when they did collaborate with outside people that had strong voices. Both Jimmy Johnson and Bill Parcells had strong voices. And at the end of the day, I believe that Joneses were still making those decisions, but they had people that not only had the intellect and the football chops, but they also had the ability to push back on the Joneses, and the Joneses actually accepted it. Now, I say that without knowing what the dynamic is now and how much pushback they allow from other people and how much they allow from Coach McCarthy, from Dan Quinn, from the other personnel people that are there. So to me, it looks like an organization sometimes when they've had people of strong influence, they have been a more consistent and better team. Now, they've always had talent. They keep having talent. But what it allows is this organization to be steered in a different direction when there are stronger personalities to match those of the Jones family.
Listen, we know the last 32 first-round quarterbacks, seven are stars, 13 are busts, and then there's a lot of okay. A lot of Teddy Bridgewaters, you can win games, you would upgrade if you could. And so this year we have five first-round quarterbacks. We know all five aren't going to crush it. So my guess is Mac Jones will win the most games because he's going to play and he's got the best O-line of the group maybe and the best running game. What as a general manager, it's a different world now, Scott, whereas these kids come out of high school with 10,000 snaps. There's Elite 11 camps, personal coaching. So it used to be you give Eli Manning four full years. It kind of feels like you get about 2 years now, and GMs have to go, listen, I expect more now. This kid has way more tutoring, came into college football a much cleaner prospect. So let me ask you, what Daniel Jones is the one I keep looking at. Daniel Jones with the Giants. Okay, I like Joe Judge. I don't love their offensive line, but I like the pieces. In the Tua Daniel Jones world, I have questions with both, but they've won some games. How long do you give them? Let's start with Jones, then go to Tua. If you were making that decision, this is not the 80s where you give a guy 4 years. It's not anymore. How much more do you give Daniel Jones before you make a decision?
Whether it's Daniel Jones or another quarterback, I think when it's a young quarterback that you've drafted, you've got to give that player at least 3 to 4. I know you said you don't like the four number, but you do have to give them 3 to 4 years because not every situation is exactly the same. It's not cookie cutter, right? Some guys come in and are thrown into the fire, like Trevor Lawrence is going to be this year, right? There's other players like, again, Tom Brady, who got to sit as an apprentice for a year and then even didn't begin his second year as a starter. You get guys like Jimmy Garoppolo who sit the bench for a while, then they're starting. So not every, you know, entry into the league is the same. So to give a blanket answer is difficult, but I would say by 3 or 4 years, you need to have it figured out because there's some players that start off really strong for whatever reason, and then they, you know, they peter out. So I think that mark has to be about 3 or 4 years, and the fourth year is a real teller, I think. And I understand that some guys that just burst onto the scene and they have good teams around them. Again, I would say a lot of the young players that that are successful early on generally have other things around them that are pretty good, like a good defense, good special teams. You mentioned earlier about how opportunistic, you know, that I forget what team was it, but the opportunistic defense that scored points, Miami. They have teams, you know, people around them surrounding them, helping them win, that happens. It happens to help them as well.
Yeah. Daniel Jones has Daniel Jones and Sam Darnold have a turnover issue. Jones has a fumble issue. Sam's got a pick issue. And that's one of those things. I don't know if I guess you can correct it. I talked to Jason Garrett. That always worries me. If I got like 32 starts from you and you just turn it over. Although Peyton Manning, I talked to Peyton Manning yesterday. He said, I was a turnover machine, and then I got Tony Dungy, and Tony Dungy came to me and said, stop turning it over. You're losing us games. And Peyton was like, he said, eat it sometimes. Like, stop, you know. So, he, I mean, even the great Peyton Manning needed Tony Dungy to finally confront him and say his first meeting was stop throwing interceptions. So, I mean, Daniel Jones and Darnold, can they overcome the turnover mess?
Well, you mentioned those two. It's Jones, it's Darnold, it's Jameis Winston. Here's what it is. I think it comes down to the personality because, like you say, there's certain players that can be fixed, Colin. Peyton was fixable because even with all of the confidence and strength that Peyton Manning had, he has a great deal of humility. It's one of the things I respect about him beyond explanation. He was able to humble himself and do that. And I think some of that comes down to, with the two players you mentioned, I'll throw Jameis Winston in there. Any player that has a turnover problem, there's a problem that needs to be fixed, but there's also a mentality that has to be fixed. And you have to have more respect for the ball. You know, a coach I used to work with used to say all the time, respect the ball, respect the ball. And that's what it comes down to, because it's the most important thing on the field is the football. So to me, I think some players can fix it, some can't. But, Colin, I really believe it comes down to a mentality of the individual.
Yeah, no, it like I think Jameis and Sam are going to have bounce back years. I do, because I think the offense they're in now is going to kind of limit some. I don't think Jameis is going to be quite as letter rip as he was under Arians. I think under Peyton he'll be a more efficient thrower of the football. And I think to your point, sometimes it is stylistic. I think Sean Payton's style is better for Jameis than Bruce Arians' style, which is very aggressive.
I agree. And the other thing there is this. We're going to find out with Jameis whether he's learned a lesson or not, and whether or not he's going to be able to humble himself, because right now he's at a place where he can do everything that Sean's telling him to do, because he has seen the other side. He's felt the other side. He's been, you know, he was out of Tampa Bay. He sat the bench behind Drew. Now he has an opportunity. To me, the key, Colin, is going to be he's going to experience some success. I truly do believe that, because I think Sean is such a good coach. To me, the key is going to be, how does he handle his success, and does he revert back to the old patterns of behavior, or does he move forward with some humility?
Good stuff, Scott Pioli. Great seeing you. Have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.
Hey, thanks again for having me. Great to see you again.
Great to see you. Yeah, it is. It's weird though. I find myself much less patient with young quarterbacks. I'm like 2 years, and like the first year, I've always said this with a coach, like Joe Judge, Brian Flores. First year, all I want to see is like small increments. Second year, I got to see some wins. Like with Daniel Jones, the promising thing was at the end of last year, he cut down on the turnovers. Darnold's not shown the ability to do that. And I love Sam. Sam has not shown an ability to just eat it. Just, I'm throwing it away. And Peyton Manning told me this yesterday talking to him. He said, Tony Dungy looked me in the eye and said, stop throwing interceptions. You're losing us games. And he was like, the first time a coach like confronted me. And I was like, he just like, eat it, throw it out, dirt it. And it's funny. And then Peyton was like, wow, I'm losing us games. And it's a real issue for Darnold. Daniel Jones last year really cut down. So he had the self-awareness. I worry about this. Some guys, stylistically, it's very possible that Darnold and Jameis Winston, this is how they play. This is their DNA. Sam's a former linebacker. They just play. Jay Cutler's like that. Jay just played.
Well, they'd rather risk it, but I there might be some of a mentality of, and we see players push, especially when they're under pressure, where they're trying to make the 40-point play, and it's like just live to see another day.
That's a hard thing for, if you're an aggressive guy. And your whole life, you've just been high school, college, aggressive wins. And then you get a coach that says, throw it away. It's hard. It's not your style. It's not how you're defined.
No, it's
not
a tweaking mentality.
Darnold is I got to make a play. And it's really the part, I don't know if it's correctable.
You see it in runners too, though. Because sometimes guys will bail in the pocket and you're like, you don't need to do that. You're not going to make the play here. You're not faster than that defender.
Right.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Start Saturday strong on Fox with the Big Noon Kickoff pregame show live and on site from Madison at 10 a.m. Eastern. Then it's a Big Ten showdown as 19th-ranked Penn State squares off with number 12 Wisconsin. And number 16, LSU makes their first ever appearance at the Rose Bowl to take on UCLA, all on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Penn State, Wisconsin has ramifications for this year. It's going to be an unbelievable game. LSU, UCLA has ramifications for the next several years because if Ed Orgeron loses, they're not going to announce it, but he's done. He's in big, big trouble. Outside of Joe Burrow, he's a 20-11 football coach. And if it's 20-12 after this weekend and the SEC is jammed this year, Georgia's good, Bama's good, it's the best Texas A&M team in a long time, watch out. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Great news for the Giants. Saquon Barkley participated in his first fully padded practice Thursday and took contact for the first time since tearing his ACL last season. This was the next step in his recovery process, and he said he felt good after the session. He will need to go through another padded practice next week before getting cleared by doctors, but he is trending in the right direction, and there is reportedly optimism that he will be able to play week one.
Wow. So it's interesting. So this is his first padded practice.
First padded practice and contact.
But
yes.
He got contact, yes. Too. Okay, all right. Oh, man, I don't know if I'd be comfortable with that. I'd like him to have four or five contact practices
before playing week one.
I mean,
it's optimism that he'll play week one. So it's not been confirmed, obviously, and week one is a week away.
Okay, so who do the Giants open with week one? I don't know if I'd be comfortable.
Well, either way, this is good news overall.
Oh, it's great news.
They open with the Broncos. And then they have Washington.
Are they at Denver? Or I think is Denver.
No, they're at home.
All right.
Oh, I'm sorry. They are at Denver. Yes, they are.
No,
at Denver.
They're not winning at Denver without Bark. They have to play Saquon to win there.
I don't think they're going to have much success at all this season without Saquon. So it's good news that he's at least trending towards playing Week One, and if not Week One, very early in the season. But again, I know that generally the face of the team is the quarterback, but in this situation Saquon is the face of this team, and he's the energy of this team as well, so especially with this offensive line being the way that it is, which is basically the worst in the NFL, it's going to be huge for Daniel Jones to have Saquon out there. So that's good news for the Giants. So Mac Jones won the starting quarterback job with his performance in training camp in the preseason, and cornerback J.C. Jackson got to see Jones's progress going up against him every day in practice, and he is now the latest Patriot to sing Mac and Cheese's praises.
Matt Jones, he's going to be that guy. I mean, he's a rookie. I mean, but he plays like a vet. I mean, the way he read defenses, the way he step up in the pocket, deliver the ball. I mean, he's improved since the first time I seen him.
Everyone seems very high on the young fella.
I know. I went a little cray cray this week, and I took them from 10 wins to 12, and now I feel like that's one too many. But maybe I stick with it. I got all weekend to think about this stuff. I get one more amendment next week. I have to do it before Thursday, so I have to do it
Wednesday.
So you
want to do it Thursday?
It just depends on what show needs more help. I'll probably do it Tuesday. Monday, I got Colin Wright, Colin Ross.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'll probably do it Tuesday or Wednesday. I'm going to go and make my second, my final.
Well, let's just look through their schedule really quickly. And I'm sorry to the graphics folk because I was doing the rookies there. So the Dolphins Patriots week one.
They're favored. So it's at Foxborough, and that's a win to me.
Then the Jets at the Jets.
Win.
At the same. No, I'm sorry. Jets at home. At the Saints.
Win.
Bucks.
Loss.
Texans.
Win.
Cowboys.
Where's it at?
It is at Dallas.
I'll say loss. I'll throw a loss in there.
At the Jets.
Win.
Chargers at home.
Loss.
The Patriots. The Panthers at home.
Win.
And they're at the Browns.
Loss.
This is riveting. I'm sorry, guys. I'm trying.
Go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. Patriots at home. Against the Falcons.
Win.
At the Titans.
I'll give them a road win there. I'll give that because I didn't give them one at Dallas, so that's now nine.
Okay. Bills at home.
Loss.
Colts at home.
I'm going to give them a win there.
At the Bills.
Loss.
At the Jags.
Win.
And then Dolphins at home.
there's the season. So I have them at 12. That will decide it. And my takeaway is it's going to mean something because they're not going to run away with this division. So that's why I went from 10. I did the same thing. I've got them at like 12, 11, depending on the last week against the, if they beat Miami twice, they win 12. If they split
with Miami. I don't think they'll beat Miami twice, though.
All right.
He did move up from plus 1,000 to plus 600 after being named the Patriots starter in odds for Offensive Rookie of the Year, according to Fox Bet. Trevor Lawrence has the best. Justin Fields plus 500. Trey Lance plus 550. Mac Jones plus 600. Zach Wilson plus 800. I think Micah Parsons is kind of a sleeper for
Najee Harris for Pittsburgh.
Najee Harris, too.
Has 800 yards.
Because they're going to lean into him.
Yeah, because they don't want Ben throwing
it 50 times.
Right.
So Cam Newton is in need of a new team after being released by the Patriots this week. Mike McCarthy was asked about the possibility of adding Cam to the Cowboys roster, but he said he is set with the quarterbacks they have.
Just to sit here and talk about any of the players on our roster, I don't think there's really anything that's beneficial that comes out of that for us. But Cam's, I had a chance to compete against Cam, a chance to watch, some of his tape in New England. So I still think he has a ton of football left. But, we're very excited about the group that we have.
Will Greer is a really perfect fit. He's mobile like Dak, and he's got a fairly lively arm like Dak. I think Will Greer's actually a perfect Cowboy backup.
Well, Cooper Rush is likely the backup, and then they have Will Greer there, and Ben DiNucci is on the team's practice squad. I mean, before they signed Will Greer, I thought it would be a possibility that Cam would end up there, and I don't think it would have been too disruptive to Dak. Like, Dak's obviously the quarterback there. It's pretty aggressive for him to say. He's saying he still has a lot of football left, but what is the market for Cam? I think that he is going to end up somewhere once the season starts and an injury happens.
Yeah, there's...
I don't think last year is a good evaluation of what Cam still has left. I don't think he's a top quarterback in this league, but I think he is still capable of starting and giving something to a team. But it's going to be a team that is in desperate need of a quarterback. Like, at this point, everyone pretty much has their roster set. Like, that's how these cuts work. If you're in competition with a rookie quarterback in New England and get beat out by that rookie quarterback, I mean, that's where you are right now. And I love Cam, but that's what the market is saying is available to him right now.
The market speaks. The market's the truth. I'm not the truth. Twitter's not the truth. The market's the truth.
Yes, and it's not a matter of personality or any of those things. It's what you're able to contribute. Nobody cares about that if you are able to contribute to wins in the league. It just doesn't matter, and that's just not what the marketplace is saying right now. And it's also not a good time to be on the market when everyone pretty much has their rosters and has made those moves. But I do think that he will end up on a team at some point this season.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Why, the AFC and the NFC, the NFL execs put all the teams in order. We'll go back to it. Why the AFC is so much easier to predict than the NFC. There's one reason, and it's why most of you can predict the AFC, which I almost agree with. Almost down the line, every team, I agree with the AFC rankings. I don't agree with half of the NFC rankings. And I bet you're the same, and I'll give you the explanation. It's pretty simple. Why next?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The NFL regular season starts next week, and Terry Bradshaw is giving away $1 million on the Fox Bet Super 6 app. Scan the code below, download the app for free, and predict the outcome of 6 NFL games for your shot to win Terry's money.
By the way, DoorDash is here. Get more from your neighborhood. $10 off now. Groceries, pet food, Dash Pash. Try it for free. Year-round savings. DoorDash. So, NFL executives... in the NFC and AFC, ranked the teams 1 through 16. And they had comments. Very fun. So let's go to the AFC. I went 7-for-7 last year predicting AFC playoff teams. Why? Because it's easier. Because in the AFC, at the top, you get two we knows. Kansas City, Buffalo, and Baltimore. We know Andy Reid, we know Sean McDermott, and we know John Harbaugh. We know they're really, really good coaches. But we also get three we know from the quarterbacks. We know Mahomes is great. We know Josh is great. And we know Lamar Jackson wins 81% of the games he starts. So at the top, it's all we know, we know. The next six, you at least get one we know and one we think. So Cleveland, we know the coach. Stefanski can coach. He really made Baker work. We think Baker will make it work this year. We know Frank Reich can coach. We think Carson Wentz still has something left. We know Justin Herbert's filthy good. We think Staley can coach. We know Vrabel, we know Belichick, and Tomlin can coach. We think Mac Jones looked pretty good. We think Big Ben's in the best shape of his life, and we think Tannehill is better than he was 5 years ago. So, but I know in the AFC, this is why the AFC is much easier for you to predict and much easier for me. We got two we knows at the top and a lot of we knows and we thinks. In the NFC, it's much different. We don't have a lot of we know. I mean, even the top team, Tampa Bay, according to the executives, we know Brady's great. We think Arians is great, but like he retired, he went into broadcasting. He came back to Tampa, had a losing record. So when you look at the NFC rankings, even the top team, it's not a we know. It's a we know, we think. And then they have the Rams, by the way, at third. Well, we know McVay's really good. We think Stafford is going to put his arms around this program and work. 49ers at five. We know Kyle Shanahan can coach. We think Garoppolo will stay healthy, and we think Trey Lance will eventually be pretty good. Even when you go to 7 in Dallas, well, we know Dak is productive. We think McCarthy can sort of coach. I mean, I know we know Kyler Murray's got a lot of talent. I'm not really sure if we know Cliff Kingsbury can coach. So I find the NFC totally up. I disagree with a lot of these picks. In the AFC, if you go back to the AFC, I 1 through 10, I got no issues with it. Chiefs 1, Bills, Ravens, Browns, Colts, Chargers, Titans, Patriots, Steelers, Broncos. I'm right there with you. I'd probably put Dolphins ahead of the Broncos, but I'm right there with you. I'd probably flip Titans, Patriots. I go to the NFC, I disagree with half of it. And I just think the AFC is a conference of answers. The NFC is a conference of questions. And go back to the NFC, like I think they have the Saints way too high. I think they have the Saints at 6. It's way too high in my opinion. They have Arizona above Washington. I completely disagree with that. They have Philadelphia ahead of Atlanta, Chicago, the Giants. I totally disagree with that. It is amazing. Executives, we talked about this earlier. Do we have the opening press conference ever by Nick Sirianni? It's too late to get it now, but I struggle as a talker watching people struggle talking and then feeling confident about them. I really do. When Sean McVay had his first press conference, I'm like, okay, Nick Saban at Alabama first press conference. Like when you see a guy stand up and he has a message and he's strong, and he's authoritative, I just believe him. I mean, don't you, if you look at the talk show hosts, political, sports, you listen to and trust, their presentation makes you feel they know what they're talking about. If they're stumbling all over themselves, you don't feel they know what they're doing. Nick Sirianni and Dan Campbell have been so bad at the mic that I lose trust in them. Even though I'm not watching film, I'm not at practice. So clearly, executives in the NFL think much. Now they don't think Philadelphia is great, but they got them higher than the Giants. They got them right neck and neck with Washington. When Ron Rivera talks, I see a powerful presence. I see a message. It is clear. It's been clear for a decade. So Ron makes me trust his team. Nick makes me worry that he can't find a parking spot at the facility.
I mean, I don't know how the Eagles are one spot behind Washington.
How?
When Ron Rivera has coached in a Super Bowl.
And first year, he walked into a dysfunctional mess and they won the division.
Right.
And gave Tampa fits in a playoff game.
And they have an elite unit on their team. Like, there's not one elite unit on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Their tight ends are pretty good.
Elite?
Well, they're pretty good.
I mean, they're good. They're good. I'm talking about, like, arguably the best in the league in Washington.
So, I asked Ryan Russell this. Am I a verbalist? That I hold it against you if you're not authoritative and verbally...
Listen, everyone does that. We do it with presidents. We do it with talk show hosts. We do it with everyone. But perhaps he's better at speaking football to his team than he is at talking to a bunch of, you know, reporters.
God, I hope. Jersey Mike's, if they had a resume, it'd say 99% fat-free at Jersey Mike's. Be a sub above. Try their number 7, turkey provolone, hour 3 next.